casting the other in darkness. He looks devastatingly handsome, even in his roughened exhaustion. His eyes open. There shouldn't be any way he can see me, but his gaze seems to land on my exact position. Holding my breath, I sink onto my haunches, mere inches of wood to balance on between the stones and thin air that would drop me into the water a couple of feet below. His eyes follow my movement.
"Look who it is,"
he croons, though it takes effort to understand with the gravel in his voice.
"The little thief herself."
"I'm not a thief. I never took anything from the vendor at the market."
"But you did take something."
"That was an accident." The brig is nothing more than a box. If he were to lie down widthwise, he wouldn't fit. The chains around his wrists and ankles clang together as he leans closer, his face gaining clarity in the shadows despite moving away from the light. His eyes are alert. Surprising, considering the state he's in. Clothes and skin covered in smut from the stones and moisture, blood dried across his skin. The bruises somehow nastier than they were a day ago. A lascivious smile tugs at the corner of his mouth, his eyes holding mine through the gaps in the stone.
"Was detaching the back of my foot from my leg also an accident?"
I match his smile. "No." There's a flash of teeth when he says,
"You seem to be prone to defiance."
"Based on acting in self-defense?"
"Based on you being here right now."
He's not wrong. "You wanted my attention," I say. "Now you've got it."
"Let me guess," he says. "The boy told you."
My hackles rise. "The boy," I spit, "is the future leader of Alaha, and you can at least feign respect when speaking of him."
"Is that how you always refer to him? The future leader of Alaha?"
He's mocking me. "Why did you come here?" He's really smiling now.
"For you, of course."
A shiver runs down my spine. Although I'm mostly concealed on the other side of the cell wall, I feel as if he's able to see every inch of me. His words cause a visceral reaction. One of fear or disgust? I don't know. "What do you want with me?" His smile remains, but somehow loses the bitterness underneath, shedding the condescending edge. He cocks his head to the side, then returns to his original position, relaxing against the wall.
"I can't tell you."
"What?" It comes out too loud, and my eyes flit to the bars in the door, checking the guard's position. Thankfully, the sound of crashing waves helps muffle our voices. The shadow remains unmoving in the flickering light. "You wanted to speak to me," I seethe, quieter. "So speak." He shakes his head once.
"I don't trust you yet."
"Trust me?" I repeat, incredulous. "What does trusting me have to do with anything?" He eyes me for a long moment.
"Bryn?"
My name comes out like more of a question than a statement, as if he's playing with the sensation of it in his mouth.
"Doesn't feel like it suits you."
I'm positive he is irritating me on purpose. "What's your name?"
"Aker,"
he declares. "Do you have a family name?" He ignores my question.
"I hope you didn't receive a tongue lashing because of me."
He may be in the cell, but it's obvious I'm stuck abiding by his terms for this conversation. Kai doesn't speak to me like he does to you.
"That's good to know."
He shifts his weight when a wave breaks around us, sending water into his cell and spraying the stones.
"Considering what he is willing to do to you."
"If you're referring to my time in this cell, rest assured I deserved my punishment." And there it is, that smile he uses like a weapon.
"Oh, I'm sure you did."
He shuffles toward my side of the cell, chains clinking as he moves.
"But that's still not what I'm referring to,"
I swallow, half afraid to ask. He's as close to the gap in the stones as he can get.
"Tell me, what do you remember of your childhood?"
It's not uncommon amongst the Alaha for children to follow the same career path as their parents. Fishermen take their children out to sea early, sometimes within days of being born. From what I've been told, my parents often like to take me out with them on fishing expeditions. When I was 7, a search party found me in the boat, alone. Not a single hint as to where my parents went or what happened to them.
The mystery helped perpetuate the folklore of the giant squid, but the most likely reason for their disappearance would be that they were spearfishing and forgot to tie off to the boat. Then, by the time they came to realize their grave mistake, the boat had drifted too far out of reach. I remember the days following, the way the pretty lady held me close as I cried and cried and cried. Kai's mother, Fallon. That is my earliest memory. Her and the gray-eyed boy who had a hard time reeling in his curiosity as he looked up at me in his mother's arms. A gradual feeling builds inside me. A yawning cavern door I haven't opened in a long, long time. "Why are you so sad?" the boy whispered to me as his mother dozed with me in her arms. I whispered, "I don't know." I recall how frustrating it was that the tears suddenly stopped despite the gnawing pain in my heart. I recall the strangeness of the woman who attempted to soothe me and my desire to go home. But I can't recall a single thing about my parents, nor the home I longed for. Kai's parents took me in after mine died, but I don't remember anything prior to age 7, I tell him. He wouldn't have asked if he didn't already know. He doesn't have to voice it for me to see the confirmation in his eyes. "The only way they agreed to bring you in to speak with me was if I made certain..." He tilts his head as he sorts out his words. "Gave assurances that I wouldn't reveal too much. So you're going to have to ask the right questions."
"What do you mean?"
He holds my gaze. "I think you know."
Gave assurances? Was he speaking of a blood oath?
The blood oath was said to magically bind a person to their word, a promise with deadly consequences if broken. More folklore. "The oaths you speak of aren't real." He lifts one brow in response.
"They're folly," I say. "Kai and I would pretend as children. We'd prick our fingers and swear on our lives, and we never keeled over and died if we broke them."
He shakes his head. "You are missing a vital piece, the glue that makes the promise hold." I think back on the old wives' tale and the rhyme that went with it. Blood to blood, trust to trust. We plant this soil.
Soil?
He nods. "But Alaha doesn't have any." By the way he remains silent, I'm going to assume that's not true. I release a breath, understanding dawning. "The captain has Kenta soil in his possession." We're inches away, separated by a barrier of rock, and our eyes meet through the crevice.
"The soil was old. Centuries old, if I had to guess, so the oath will wear thin over time. I can already feel the binds loosening. The more you're able to piece together, the flimsier it becomes."
"Let's say I believe you," I say, dubious. "If magic and blood oaths and gods know what is true, why make a pact that could kill you if it's broken, assuming you made a blood oath with Ren?"
"I knew they wouldn't let me speak to you alone, and they'd likely send someone to accompany you for protection."
He tilts his head to the side in contemplation.
"I needed to see it while it was happening."
"See what?" He's quiet for a moment, which tells me the oath is stopping him from revealing too much. He lets out a frustrated breath.
"Do you love him?"
I'm confused and kind of irked by his invasive question. "That's a little personal, don't you think?" He remains silent.
"Yes, I love him," I tell him.
"He's my closest friend." He shakes his head, chuckling quietly.
"That has to be the worst proclamation of love I've ever heard."
"I didn't realize you were wanting me to recite poetry about his eyes."
"Closest friend,"
he repeats, as if he's got all the time in the world to ponder my statement.
"I'd be mortified if those were the words my match used to describe me."
"Fine," I say through clenched teeth. "Tell me about your match. What do you love about her?" That's assuming he has a wife. Considering his looks, the kind of handsome that's hard to stare at, I'd say yes, but his personality is very off-putting. His smile fades into something sadder.
"She has beautiful eyes,"
he says softly, like he's lost a memory.
"They're brown and green and amber, like every color of every season. I've looked everywhere for eyes like hers, and nothing has ever been able to compare." I actually hate how genuine he sounds. Touching, I say, letting the annoyance seep into my tone. She must be worried about you. He shakes his head.
I worry more about her, I assure you.
Lucky her.
Careful, he draws. You sound a little bitter. Is it because you realize you have zero romantic interest in the man you plan to marry?
The reason I was in this cell, I say, embarrassment and spite running away with my tongue, is because we broke the rule of boundaries. Do you know what that is? He's no longer smiling.
I've heard of the Alaha's covenants. They're a mockery of Kenta traditions, enforced to maintain control over their people.
Any remaining impulse I had to be nice evaporates into thin air. The captain isn't a dictator. He's kind. He took me in when I had no one. The fire in my eyes ignites in his, each feeding off the other.
And what about your real parents? Where are they?
Dead.
You've seen their bodies.
It doesn't matter what happened to them. They're gone. He clicks his tongue, a look of disgust on his face.
I can't help you if you want to keep your head buried in the sand.
Help me with what?
He shakes his head. That's not the right question.
If I could reach through the wall, I'd strangle him. When you accused me of stealing in the market, were you trying to... I trail off, hesitant to speak my suspicions if I'm wrong. Were you trying to help me?
Yes.
There's a touch of eagerness in his voice. Because you think I'm in danger? He allows his silence to answer for him. From who? Waves are coming in faster now, the tide rising with the moon. It feels like an omen for what's to come. My parents, my past, my lack of memories. He's insinuating something big. I swallow past the lump in my throat. It's almost like he's saying I'm not Alaha. I didn't need him to tell me. I've known for a very long time the feeling of other I've held in a hidden place inside of me, but it's something else to face it from an outside source, for my fears to be reflected back at me by a stranger. Panic engulfs my lungs and chest, sending me teetering on the small ledge. We're done here. He smiles without teeth, but doesn't attempt to change my mind or bait me. Draping one arm over a bent knee, he dips his head in a nod.
Rest assured, Bryn. All will be revealed in due time.
There's an implied message somewhere in his words, a hidden riddle he wants me to solve. It feels like a game. One I'm not interested in playing. Enjoy your time in Alaha. I push to stand.
It looks like you're going to be here for a while.
It's a long trek back to the South Tower with the conversation replaying in my mind. I thought speaking to him without the hindrance of witnesses would alleviate my curiosity, but it seems to have done the opposite. I remind myself of Messer's advice when I get to the end of the bridge. Pulling the dagger from my waist, I run my fingers over the dark blade and worn handle, committing it to memory. With my heart in my throat, I hold it out over the water and drop it. It disappears almost instantly into the dark abyss. Chapter 10. Commander Johannes, Messer's father, shakes Captain Wren's hand, then Kai's, looking as self-righteous as the bastard can get. It's graduation day. The main is becoming more and more crowded the closer it gets to the start of the ceremony. Graduates are accompanied by their families. Due to my lack of relatives, Kai invited me to arrive with his parents. It would have been rude to say no.
I hear congratulations are in order,
Commander Johannes says. He looks at me, taking in my newly appointed guard uniform, then turns his attention back to the men at my side. His wife, Dana, on the other hand, takes my hands in hers. I look forward to seeing you on the committee, she says, referring to the group of commander's wives who plan all of Alaha's activities. I hadn't given it much thought, but it makes sense that it would be expected of me to participate. Pasting on a smile, I thank her, grateful when she releases her hold on me. Messer grins at me, his eyes raking over my uniform.
Looks good on you.
I tug on the material, hating how tight and itchy it is.
Yours too. Your sword looks extra shiny.
He looks down at the hilt exposed at his side with a proud appreciation in his gaze.
My parents had it polished and sharpened for me as a graduation gift.
Then I see it again. More bruising down the side of his neck, in the perfect shape of fingerprints. I clench my teeth and look away, my eyes landing on Messer's mother. It wasn't what I intended, but the anger and disgust must radiate from my gaze because Kai bumps me with his elbow.
You're coming, right?
I shake my head, catching up to the conversation about the dinner following the graduation ceremony. I can't. I have a meeting with the dressmaker. I'm late getting fitted for my matching ceremony dress, cutting it too close to miss the appointment.
If there is dinner, Commander Johannes says, Callum raised the blue flag this morning.
Oh no, Fallon mutters. Blue is the worst of the flag colors, meaning a terrible storm is coming. Dana waves a hand in the air. Callum is a worrywart. He often puts up warnings due to an overabundance of caution. Fallon doesn't look convinced. We can only hope, she says, looking to the overcast sky. The matching ceremony is in 3 days. Of course that's her biggest concern. A blue flag doesn't just warn of wind and rain, but the kind of storm that often causes the sea level to rise high enough to flood the bottom story of the grove, sometimes the second, and the brigs are sure to be the first thing to go under.
I'm sure everything will be handled before then, Captain Wren says.
He sees another high-ranking commander and excuses himself and Fallon, but his words hang in the air as I watch him walk away. We mingle for a while longer before taking our place. My class is lined up across the middle of the main. Our family and friends stand opposite us, applauding after each student is called to receive their pin, a circle of metal that signifies the history of the armor that Alaha wear during battle. We affix them to our shoulders while we're on duty. Every inhale feels like a feat in itself. Captain Wren calls the next student, Joel, and my eyes trail my classmates' movements, gaze colliding with Kai's on the other side of the main. All 17 of the high-ranking commanders stand shoulder to shoulder, waiting in a line to shake the hands of each graduate after they're pinned. Kai stands last, the youngest, until Messer takes his place alongside him next year. Wren has to all but yell over the howl of wind as it picks up strength. The sky above is turning darker by the minute, and I swear I already feel a raindrop pelting my skin every now and then. Wren's comment about everything being handled before the matching ceremony leaves a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach. If Callum is right, there's not a chance Aker will survive in the brig. I don't think Wren has any intention of letting the Kenta soldier out. It'd be too risky. The way the guards were so diligent about making sure Kai removed his weapons before letting us in to see him bothers me. I think they're scared of him. Aurora elbows me in the side. Pay attention. My eyes snap to Captain Wren's, and I realize he said my name at least twice by the look on his face. My stomach churns as I force my legs to move. If I were to unclench my teeth, I'd hurl in front of everyone.
Wren,
the captain says, smiling when I stand before him. He affixes the pin to my uniform, and I pray he doesn't feel my heart pounding through the fabric of my shirt.
Congratulations.
I dip my head in acknowledgement, not trusting myself to open my mouth. I continue on to the commanders and begin moving down the line. Most of the handshakes are half-hearted, a formality they're forced to endure. But a few make a point to at least look me in the eye. Kai's presence looms larger the closer I get to the end. Then I'm standing in front of him, meeting those gray eyes, so like my own. Open and inviting and warm, familiar, like home. He holds his hand out, and I try to hide the shake in mine as I slide my palm into his.
Congratulations, Bryn,
he says, gaze steady. Calm washes over me, easing the tension in my teeth. He holds my hand longer than necessary, but I don't let go, welcoming this moment of comfort from him. I've waited for this day for what feels like my entire life, but I can't escape the feeling of despair hanging over me. I somehow manage to make it through the rest of the ceremony. The captain finishes his speech, and the crowd disperses. Kai and his father are swarmed, and Messer finds me leaning against the bridge's railing. He nudges me with his shoulder.
Everything okay?
I shake my head. It's not possible to describe exactly what it is I'm feeling, but I know for a fact everything is not okay. Releasing a breath, he clasps his hands over the rail, looking out over the water.
My parents finalized my marriage,
he says. Oh, yeah? I say, trying to gauge his emotions. And?
It's Aurora.
I'm speechless. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't this. Not Aurora, the daughter of a fisherman with no history in the guard. Her family has no rank and no money. Nothing of value to negotiate with for a match with someone of Messer status. Are you happy with it? I stutter out, shocked. He gives a little shrug.
I suppose I'll never be bored.
Looking at me, he smiles, but it's dimmer than usual.
I'm just looking forward to getting out of my parents' place and into my own.
Understanding dawns, and I smile back at him. You deserve to be happy, Messer.
As do you, B,
he says with a sad and knowing smile. After the matching ceremony, I'll be forced to leave my shield on Urchin Row to live with Kai in the center of the grove. It's a sacrifice I'm required to make to create room for any unmatched after the ceremony, but it also means losing my favorite drawing spot on the roof. It may not be much, but it's mine. Well, mine and the bird's, and I don't want to share him with the new occupant of my current home. If they don't scare him away, that is. A strong gust of wind comes off the sea. Decorations strung between the trees snap, sending their strings and banners into the branches and leaves. People begin to depart to get out of the worsening weather. When I look out over the churning water, I spot something different. The ship, I say, looking at Messer. It's gone. He follows my gaze north to where the ship was posted on the horizon, the space now vacant. We make a beeline for Captain Wren and Kai and point out the missing ship. Wren isn't pleased, face flushing with annoyance as he asks his third in command why no one informed him. Messer's father doesn't have a good answer, which only serves to anger Wren more.
Dinner is canceled, Captain Wren declares. Everyone gather whatever food and supplies they may need to shelter in place until morning. It looks like we're in for a rough night.
Everyone is prompt in their departure. Messer leaves with his mother, but I wait for Kai to finish conversing with his father and fellow commanders by the nearest stairs. We don't speak until we're safe from eavesdroppers, pausing on the empty path that forks in the direction of Kai's home or continues on to mine. He's going to kill the soldier, I say.
He hasn't said it, but yes,
he says, tendrils of hair breaking loose from their tie.
He's instructed all the guards to vacate their posts once the swells reach 10 feet.
By the look of the water now, that'll be within a couple of hours. Did you ever gather any more intel from him? He shakes his head.
Nothing more than what he revealed to you.
I don't like it. Letting him die. For what? Surely he didn't come all this way just to apologize, I say. Kai cocks his head to the side, eyes going to the horizon visible through the trees before he looks back at me, defeated.
Go back to your shiel. Close your shutters and hunker down. It looks like it's going to be a doozy.
We wait for a family to pass before sneaking a quick kiss, making plans to meet first thing in the morning. Today should have been full of celebration and excitement, finally accomplishing what I've worked for since the age of 13. But a heavy weight sits on my shoulders. It's like the clouds were an omen from the moment I woke up. The ship is gone now, and there's nowhere safe to hide a fugitive in the grove. Not without getting caught. Wait. I stop within feet of my door at the realization. There's exactly one place no one will look. No. I couldn't possibly. I mean, there's no way I trust him enough to hide him with me. Turning back toward the path to the South Tower, I contemplate my options. There's a chance I won't even make it in time. Hell, there's a chance I won't make it at all with the size of the white-capped waves below. But the alternative? Dang rabbits. I sprint to the tower, telling a guard I run into along the way that I'm making a last-second run to get lamp oil.
Thunder rumbles in the distance, and I strip off my uniform vest when I finally reach the end of the grove. The water looks angry, but I'm confident in my abilities to reach the ladder to the crossbeams under the main. I do so without issue, but the real problem is the slickness of the beams, which are coated with a thin layer of seafoam. Some of the waves cover them long enough for me to lose sighting of my footing, so it takes me twice as long to reach him. With a foot of water already flooding the space, he trudges to my side of the cell, fingers gripping between the stacked stones. His expression is unreadable. I clamp my hands on the stones in an effort to stop myself from sliding off the ledge. Tell me something, anything, to convince me to help you. He shakes his head.
I can't.
I groan. Because of this alleged blood oath?
No,
he says, voice tired and hoarse.
I'm never going to tell you something just to benefit myself.
Not even if it means saving your life? I ask, stunned. He shakes his head again.
No.
A wave rolls high enough to reach my waist, and it takes all my strength to keep hold of the wall. I brace my forehead against the stones and consider my options, knowing there are only two outcomes.
Look at me.
The command in his voice compels me to look up. He is braced against the other side of the wall, eye level with me. Nothing but patience and understanding shine back in his gaze, his expression at complete odds with the storm raging around us. Judging by the panic filling my lungs, one would think it was my life on the line, not his.
I don't believe you came all this way to watch me drown.
I hate the small shake of my head I give to him in answer.
Then we're wasting time,
he says, collected as ever, as if he has all the time in the world and is waiting for me to catch up. This is madness. I'll try, I tell him. I'll try to break him out. The ocean once again surges up from below, a deep, rolling wave that takes our feet from under us, leaving us treading water to keep our heads above the surface. It sends me careening back, the current wanting to drag me out to sea, but I swim against the stirring water to the other side of the brig. It's only seconds, but feels like eternity before the water swells high enough that I'm able to climb directly onto the dock. It takes longer for the water to drain through the gaps in the cell afterwards. Acre is trapped within the surge until the water finally escapes, dropping him to the hard floor of the brig, his chains rattling against the stones. I yank on the iron handle of the door, but the latch doesn't budge.
The dagger,
Acre says, wobbling to his feet.
Where's the dagger?
I open and close my mouth before I'm able to spit it out. I threw it in the ocean. He nods, quick to accept the truth, like he expected as much.
It's okay. You can call it.
I don't have time to ask what the hell he's talking about before another rough wave overwhelms us, covering our heads this time. I clutch the handle of the door to stop the wave from sweeping me away, holding my breath for nearly a minute before it finally recedes. For Acre, it's longer, and he sucks in a large breath when he emerges from inside his cell.
You can call it because it belongs to you.
He stumbles awkwardly, trying to stand, chest expanding with each ragged intake of air.
I can't explain right now, but it will answer your summons.
A smaller wave makes us float for a few seconds before dropping us back down. We're on borrowed time. Once the tide comes in fully, this entire story will be underwater within minutes. Acre's shackled hands land on mine, pressing them firmly to the bars in the window of the door.
It's a part of you, but not. Close your eyes.
I obey without question.
Feel for it. Reach out like you're picking it up from where you dropped it, like it's right there before you.
This feels insane, like I'm wasting time instead of figuring out a way to break the latch on the door. But I pretend I'm standing on solid wood that's not covered in 3 feet of water. I sense another wave coming, and I hold my breath so I can continue my mental search while underwater. Floating inside the wave without the roaring wind or under Acre's piercing gaze, I find a semblance of calm within my mind and cling to it, encasing myself. Everything becomes still. It's like time stops and the sea calms, and I'm able to clearly see the ocean floor. In my mind's eye, I skim over the sandy bottom, sending fish scurrying into the pitch black. It's desolate
and barren. My lungs begin to burn. Silt clouds my vision as I hurry, as if I'm actually walking on the ocean floor, but there it is. Lying on its side, half covered in sand, I reach and pick it up, closing my fist tightly. I gasp when the water falls, marveling at the actual dagger in my hand, excited when I meet Acre's awaiting eyes. I found it! I don't have time to process what just happened, but I can't help the grin pulling at my lips. Magic is real. His answering smile sends a spark of emotion through me. Despite the hunger and exhaustion lining his features, he's still breathtaking.
Use it to break the seal on the door.
The what? Another wave pulls us under. It goes on for so long it begins to feel like the world has no end and the sea has no bottom. We both suck in greedy air when the wave finally drops away.
What seal?
I ask as soon as I can breathe.
There's a seal on the door, but the blade can break it.
That's all he gets out before we're underwater again. I don't know what to do, but I open my eyes and find the crack between the door and the cell wall through the haze. Sticking the blade in the gap, I search for something tangible, like a latch, but come up empty. Anxiety takes over when my lungs begin to burn. I worry about Acre's ability to hold air, and I return my grip to the bars, searching for his hands. A long moment passes, too long, before I feel his hands close over mine. His grip is tight, and it's the only thing preventing me from letting go and kicking for the surface. Letting go would mean I'd be leaving him for dead. It's not an option I'm willing to accept. For some reason beyond my understanding, I know I could never live with myself if I didn't give everything I have to save him, even if it costs me my life in turn. The water takes longer to drain from the brig, and I wait with bated breath for Acre to break the surface. His gasps are desperate. His fingers tighten over mine.
Jovi.
He forces it out between breaths. Water coats his eyelashes, falling onto his cheeks. His skin is alabaster, the rich color of his cheeks that day in the market long gone, making his already dark eyes all the more intense.
That's your name. Your real name. Jovi.
There's goodbye in his tone. I shake my head. Then he starts to peel my fingers away from the metal bars.
No!
If I'm saying it to him or myself, I'm unsure, but I keep returning my grasp to the bars. Another wave and impossible weight ensues. It's dark and cold under the water. Acre's fingers are adamant now, trying to force my hand away as I put up an equal fight, refusing to let go. I keep my eyes open, focused on the task at hand. The blade swings back and forth in the crack, but I can't find the latch. Pressure builds inside my head as I fight the instinct to suck in a hopeless breath, knowing I'd kill myself within seconds, my lungs filled with salt water instead of air. Acre slams his hands against mine, but I hold on, jamming the blade in deeper. There it is. Like striking swords, the metal vibrates from the impact. Then the door gives, the force of an underwater current pulling it the rest of the way open for us. We reach for each other desperately before swimming for the surface. Up and up and up. My intake of air is a loud cry of relief. Acre's even more so. But there's no time to relax. There's just enough slack in his shackles for him to make it to the brig. We struggle our way onto the roof of the brig, and only then do we allow ourselves a moment of reprieve to breathe. Acre hacks up water, basking in the oxygen, flooding his lungs with the next inhale. Howling wind tears through the trees, sending leaves tumbling about. The wall of storm clouds is rolling in like it's bringing down the sky itself. I eye the chains around his wrists. Noticing the direction of my gaze, he holds up the shackles and pulls, muscles straining. Metal splinters apart and into the water. He falls forward, catching himself on his hands. I'm stunned, unsure how that's even possible. I turn my attention to the surf. How good of a swimmer are you? He looks out over the rolling sea, chest still heaving from exertion.
Guess we're about to find out.
Chapter 11. My hands are shaking. I ball them into fists, then relax them, taking a deep breath.
The storm passed early this morning, and it's only a matter of time before they discover our prisoner is no longer inside his cell. No body, dead or alive. And they'll begin looking. But first, food. Acre is thin. Too thin for a sea voyage. He collapsed when we reached the South Tower last night. To his credit, it would have been an arduous swim on a normal day. During a storm and while not at full strength, damn near impossible. I said as much when we climbed onto the platform, the water shoving us onto its planks. I didn't think you were going to make it. He didn't have the energy to open his eyes when he replied, me neither. I debated the merits of letting him rest there, but we had a better chance of getting him to my shield unseen during the storm, while everyone had their windows and doors boarded up. He didn't complain, not once, as I looped his arm around my shoulders and climbed to the tallest story of Alaha. He hit the floor of my shield with a thud and didn't stir. Still hasn't. He needs food and water, and that means I have to venture to the mess hall for lunch. It's better to keep up appearances anyway. I do my best to appear normal, like I didn't just break out the enemy prisoner from his cell and am now hiding him in my room. I'm anxious as I stand in line for my meal, a kitchen worker ladling out fish stew. My stomach growls and I grab an apple, tucking an extra under my arm. I turn around to find Grenadine, my favorite neighbor, standing in line behind me. I nearly leap out of my skin. There's a knowing grin on her face.
You look like hell.
Calming my racing heart, I step around her. She follows.
The storm kept me up all night, too,
she says, unfazed by my rudeness.
I hate feeling the trees sway.
The upper stories shift the most in the wind. During storms, the bridges and shields groan under the stress. There have been instances of lines snapping. Bridges have fallen, sometimes taking entire walkways with them, isolated parts of the grove from the other. You could always request to move to a lower story, I tell her. And away from me.
And leave you all alone up there?
I pick up my pace, but she manages to keep up as I take to the stairs.
But you're not alone, are you?
She whispers, eyes gleaming. I come to a screeching halt. Excuse me? She waits for someone coming down the stairs to pass between us before leaning closer.
Your pet is the only company you prefer to keep, isn't it?
The air rushes out of me, and I resume my ascension. I prefer the quiet.
That bird is anything but quiet.
She departs at the next cross-section, and I sigh in relief, but it doesn't last very long. Vibrations under my feet travel up my legs as the bridge begins to shake. 20 or more guards march throughout the shields, pairs splitting off at every cross-section along the way. Their voices carry down as they knock on doors and order people out of their homes so they can inspect inside. I don't wait around and watch like the others. As inconspicuously as possible, I hurry up the stairs, stomach in knots as I spot guards getting closer with each passing moment. Barreling through my door, I freeze, almost dropping the tray of food to the floor. The blade with the J inscribed on the hilt rests against my throat. Then, just as quickly, the blade is gone. Acre steps out from behind me.
Oh, good. You brought food.
Without apology, he scoops it from my hands. He drinks straight from the bowl, throat bobbing with every swallow. He's shirtless. Water droplets cling to his skin, hair still damp from the shower he must have taken in my absence. He grimaces after the fourth gulp.
This is terrible.
I ignore his comment. The guards are searching for you. He spots the apple and shoves the bowl back into my hands, snatching the fruit instead and taking three large bites out of it in rapid succession. He raises his eyebrows as he chews, eyes casting to the far side of the room, toward the main.
I assumed as much.
I rush to the window and throw open the curtain. You need to get to the roof. His gaze turns on me.
Where did you go this morning?
His eyes are steely, accusing. I harden my stare in return. Why would I save your life just to turn you in? He stares at me a moment longer, legs closing the distance as he encroaches on my space. I hold my breath, trepidation coating my lungs.
Or is it fear as his height and muscle tower over me? My heart skips a beat when he reaches for my hand, placing the blade in my palm.
Scream if you need me.
Then he shoves the apple in his mouth and climbs out the window, pausing when his eyes catch on my water skin on the table beside my bed before taking it with him. I release the breath in my lungs.
By all means, I mutter, closing the curtains.
I shuck off my clothes as fast as I can and douse my head under the shower to wet my hair. I'm able to throw on one of my long sleep shirts with just enough time before a quick rap sounds at the door. Kai's voice comes from the other side.
Bryn, he calls. Are you decent?
Steadying myself, I crack the door open a smidge.
Kai? What's going on?
Two guards stand at his back. Kai takes in my appearance through the gap.
Can we come in?
All of you? I say, making a point to look down at my dress, practically transparent in its thinness.
Every shield must be inspected,
says the higher-ranking guard behind him.
Future captain's wife or not, there are to be no exceptions.
Kai looks regretful as he pushes the door open, forcing me back a step. I cross my arms over my chest and do my best to appear confused. The guards dominate the space. Overkill, considering how small it is. Kai gives me an apologetic look before turning his back to me to oversee the search of my shield. My heart stops in my chest. Aker's shirt is lying in a ball underneath the sink, like he was so disgusted by it that he tossed it away without looking. Covered in blood and sweat stains, it's easy to identify. I shuffle to the other side of the room, angling my body as if to hide my nakedness as well as the item of clothing from being seen. What is it you're looking for? One of the guards inspects the wet drain on the floor, the other lifting the lone blanket on my bed to peer under it. He then moves to the window, using a finger to flip the curtain back, head swiveling up and down before letting it fall back into place. They turn to look at Kai, giving him a nod before departing. Kai shuts and latches the door behind them.
The prisoner escaped,
he says, eyes snagging on my hands, white-knuckling the hem of my shirt. There's a pregnant pause.
Someone had to help him escape. Someone from Alaha.
He runs a hand through his hair as his eyes wander around the room. He doesn't like this turn of events. He's stressed. I grab Kai's hand and pull him toward me, before letting go and resting my palm against his chest. I don't have to fabricate the worry in my gaze. He cradles my face in his hands and brings his lips to mine, the kiss tender and comforting, loosening the tightness in my chest. Kai pulls back, eyebrows scrunched together as he continues to stroke my cheeks with his thumbs.
I love you,
he says, eyes holding mine. Warmth blooms in my chest and I blink against the onslaught of moisture in my eyes. He's never said those words to me, nor I to him.
Matter of fact, no one has ever said that to me,
not that I can remember. I never thought about it much, but I realize how much weight those words hold. They mean something. They possibly mean everything. I can feel it in every stitch of my being that I am meant to be loved, and loved by him. I don't trust myself to speak without my voice cracking, so I use a hand against the nape of his neck to bring his mouth down onto mine. This kiss is anything but tender, his grip on my cheeks bruising in the best way. It's heat and desire and frustration, my front pressed against his, the evidence of his arousal between us. He tears his mouth from mine, diving back in with one last longing swipe of his tongue before releasing me fully. He looks as pained as he is flustered.
I have to go.
I nod, feeling as if a cold bucket of water has been tossed over my head.
Everyone has been instructed to stay put for the time being.
He kisses me on the cheek, a safe option, before opening the door.
I'll be sure to send someone with dinner later.
Then he's gone. As soon as I have the door latched, Aker swings back into the room, landing on his feet. His dark eyes are clear and focused as he rakes them over me, nostrils flaring. He's angry.
Yeah? Well, so am I.
I reach for the balled-up shirt and throw it at him, hitting him in the chest. He catches it before it slips to the floor.
You're going to get us both killed.
He stops mid-sentence, jaw ticking as he wrestles with the words he wants to say. All of a sudden, I'm exhausted. Too exhausted to argue, that's for sure. I crawl onto my bed. He says my name. Not Bryn, but the other one. The one that sounds foreign and familiar all at the same time, as I lie with my cheek flat to the mattress. He cusses. He overdid it. I fall asleep within seconds. Chapter 12. There's a stranger in my shiel. He's still here, very much real and present, and he's doing push-ups on the floor beside the bed. Sweat coats Akers back, his muscles contracting with the controlled motions. He finishes his set and sits back on his knees, drawing my attention to the way his muscles pull taut with each breath. Rest and hydration have done his body good. The past 2 days come into clear focus as the fog of sleep dissipates. What time is it?
Early morning. The sun will be up within the hour.
I gape at him. That means I slept for over 15 hours. He swigs from my water skin and points.
There's food.
Stew and a torn-in-half bread roll sit on a tray at the foot of my bed. On cue, my stomach grumbles, and I drag the tray onto my lap. I shovel a spoonful into my mouth. Tension fills the space. It's not that Aker looks particularly perturbed by yesterday's events, body on full display as he stands and leans against the wash basin, but I can feel the judgment rolling off of him. Thanks for saving some. Impressive, considering the level of hunger he's been contending with.
We can call it even.
Cold stew is payment for saving your life, I say, lifting a brow. When you put it into perspective, couldn't you have at least saved the whole roll for me? He quirks a sardonic smile.
After hearing my captor profess his love for you, I would have rather died.
And there it is. I don't owe you or anyone an explanation, I say, standing to place my dishes outside my door for pickup. I notice a guard a story below, patrolling, and latch the door after closing it. He tilts his head to the side as we stand facing each other.
I saw the realization in your eyes. I know you're not Alaha. Does it not change anything?
A shot of anger flushes my cheeks. This is still my life. What is it you want me to do? Leave everything I know? He raises his voice, looking at me as if the choice is clear as day.
Yes!
I shush him. Grenadine will hear you. He makes a face before whisper shouting back, Who's Grenadine? My neighbor, you moron! And there are guards on patrol. He takes a deep breath, speaking softer.
These people took you from your home, from your mother.
A headache begins to thunder behind my eyes and the room begins to spin. I fall onto my bed, placing my palms against my forehead in an effort to stifle the pounding. He scrubs a hand along his jaw.
What do you know about the history of Alaha's exile?
Your people... I stop myself, shaking my head in frustration. It takes me a moment to continue. The land territories, I amend, looking up at him. Didn't want to share their resources and land anymore, so they exiled us to the sea.
Each territory, Kenta, Roysen, Meili, and Strau, is ruled by families who are chosen by Mother Nature and given gifts as a reward for taking care of the land and its people. They are Mother Nature's heirs, if you will.
Gifts, I say, looking up at him. As in...
magic,
he says. I laugh, but the steely hold of his gaze stops it from fully forming. Magic isn't real. He cocks his head to the side, eyes roaming my room with judgmental eyes.
How would you know?
It's an effective argument to shut me up. Reclining against the side of my bed, he braces an arm over a knee.
An Alaha heir was gifted the natural ability of influence, meant to provide comfort to the fearful or calm to the vengeful, a gift designed to prevent war and strife. But the leader of the Alaha used his gifts to benefit himself. He persuaded other leaders to hand over their riches, casting their own territories into poverty, and he built armies fueled by rage, pitting them against any who were able to withstand his persuasion. He conquered territory after territory, after territory.
That's why we were shunned? He nods and looks over his shoulder at me.
That leader
is the man you know as Captain Wren.
I shake my head. That's impossible. That would make him hundreds of years old.
317. The lifespan of an heir is shortened by distance from land, but it's normal to live well past a century or two. Someone as powerful as Wren could live for millennia.
He opens his mouth to continue, only to snap it shut, teeth clenched as he shakes his head in answer. I suppose the oath still clings to him a little. Licking his lips, he takes a deep breath before trying again.
His power of influence knows no bounds. He can convince men to commit utter depravities, and women of their undying love.
And you really believe Wren is capable of these things?
Maybe not just him,
he says. Aker nods when I begin to shake my head. He would never do that to me, I say, adamant. Kai doesn't even have magic. He dips his head in answer.
He does.
Other than at the market, Kai's never been within an inch of land, I say in defense.
When you touched the wall at the market, he tried to compel me to let you go. His father was smart enough to smuggle a little bit of soil before he was exiled, to have it on hand when his son came of age.
I reach for my boots to shove them on.
It's the very soil he used when we created the Blood Oath.
He continues.
Kai's power is weak, but it's there. He's been using it on you. For years, I believe.
I'm over-tightening the laces of my boots with every angry pull. And you have these magical gifts? There's a noticeable tick in his jaw as he fights with the oath, but he's able to answer with a tiny tip of his head. Then why didn't you break yourself out of the brig, huh?
The stones it's built out of suppress magic. You probably felt it yourself when you were in there.
He eyes me for a reaction.
The suffocation,
he says. Standing, I push past him to get to the wash basin to brush my teeth. You're wrong. He stands and follows close behind me.
Where do you think you're going?
I may not have training anymore, but I still need to report to Gramble. We're supposed to receive our designated posts. He scoffs.
You're wasting your time.
He's standing entirely too close to me, but I pretend it doesn't bother me.
And why's that? Because Wren believes women have their place, and it's at his feet.
Kai would
never do that to me,
he says mockingly. I spit into the sink and spin to face him. You have a lot of nerve.
At least I have something. Better than not having a backbone.
I react without thinking, my hand poised to strike him in the face before I realize, but he catches it before I make contact. Let go of me!
He shushes me. Grenadine is right next door, remember?
Now I'm seething. The matching ceremony is tomorrow. It'll be the best time to commandeer a boat without anyone noticing. You'll be able to leave, and then we can forget we ever met. The grip he has on my wrist tightens as he pulls me closer.
If you think I'm going anywhere without you, you're mistaken.
Our bodies are inches apart, his scent filling my lungs. It's nothing I can put a name to, but masculine in every way. Heady, almost. Something akin to a genuine smile tugs at his lips, drawing my attention to his mouth. I force myself to meet his eyes, but it kind of feels like staring at the sun. You're delusional if you think I'd go anywhere with you. His eyes skim down my body, assessing.
I'll hogtie you if I have to.
I rip myself from his grasp.
Then be prepared to fight, because I'm not going down like a sinking ship.
Chapter 13. Deal me in? Everyone's heads swivel up at me in surprise. Messer, most of all. A smile spreads across his face.
You heard her,
he says, slapping the deck of cards in front of Lawson.
Deal her in.
I've never accepted Messer's or Kai's invitation to play cards on the main before, but I'm desperate to avoid my shield at whatever cost, even if it means subjecting myself to the awkward looks between the other players as I take a seat. Lawson shuffles the cards, and Ophelia, one of the commander's daughters we were in primary with, accepts the ones he slides across the smooth wooden table.
Does she know how to play?
Messer opens his mouth to reply, but I cut him off. She, I say, inspecting my cards, knows enough to get by.
Enough to put a wager on it?
Lawson says, licking his fingers as he lifts his own cards off the table. I'm not wasting my coin on a game. Messer smiles.
That's not our kind of bet.
Ophelia rolls her eyes. They've been going back and forth on how they're going to ruin the ceremony tomorrow. Ruin how? I ask, narrowing my eyes at Messer's grin. As we sit, the committee is setting up the stage for the matching ceremony tomorrow. Blue and white streamers hang from the maypoles ready for the fertility dance that will take place after everyone is matched. Well, the ones who are lucky enough to be chosen.
Whatever it is you two are scheming, please don't,
Willard says from the other side of the table.
You just don't want to delay getting back to your shield with your match,
Messer says, grinning.
Who you've yet to reveal, by the way. Scared I might swoop in and steal her?
Yes, he says, dead serious.
You're just enough of a spiteful bitch to claim my match as your own for shits and giggles.
Messer feigns offense, a hand against his chest, swooning away with a full dimpled smile.
I'm flattered you think I could steal your girl.
Ophelia, the only other girl at the table, rolls her eyes. You have your pick and you know it. Half the girls available would die happy if you picked them.
Sounds like you're speaking from personal experience,
Messer says, turning his charm on her. I watch as a blush overtakes Ophelia's cheeks. I've never met a girl who wasn't immediately enamored with Messer.
Hell, any female of any age, Grenadine included.
Even the Kenta women in the market reacted to him. If there's anyone with influence, it's Messer. I've always chalked it up to his build and dimples, but perhaps... I've spent the last few days refusing to acknowledge the constant hum that radiates from below my breastbone, a futile endeavor since I've been made aware of its presence, but I tap into it now. Thank the gods Aurora isn't the jealous type, I say, eyeing him over my cards. It's a poor attempt at flirting, but I hope I do a fair job of conveying my intent without being too obvious. His smile falters for a split second before he's able to mask it. He matches my tone.
Should she be?
I don't know what I'm looking for or if it's possible, but I send a mental net out like I did when retrieving the blade, searching for something, anything, from Messer. And feel nothing. The only thing I sense is his confusion, and that's just because I know him so well, not thanks to any magic. We play late into the night. It serves as a much-needed distraction, and I'm surprised to discover I'm not half bad. It helps that none of them besides Messer are acquainted with me well enough to know when I'm bluffing. It's enough of an advantage that it knocks out a couple of people early in the game. The players dwindle until it's just me, Messer, and Lawson. The committee has long since dispersed after finishing the decorating. Lawson throws his cards down.
You're a damn cheater. That's what you are.
Smiling, Messer slides the chips to his pile, stacked high before him.
How many months of kitchen duty do you think you'll get for streaking through the ceremony?
I give Lawson a look. More than it's worth.
He doesn't have a choice.
Messer shuffles the cards, bending them over in his hands to make them cascade into order. He lifts a brow at Lawson.
Unless you want to up the stakes.
Lawson sighs, shaking his head before scooting his chair back.
I'm calling it a night. Yeah, it's probably best to get a good night's rest. Might be your last for the foreseeable future. I suppose the brig is a better alternative than being forced to watch the matching ceremony and move into Urchin Row.
Lawson's father is a fisherman, and his mother is a laundress. He's already moved ahead in status by becoming a guard, but boys have outnumbered the girls by 2-1 for the last 3 generations. He's ordinary in looks and social standing. A match would have come by now if he had a chance of making one. Messer and I share a pitying look. Lawson shrugs as he stands.
Maybe I'll get lucky and score a young widower in the next couple of years so I can bet a woman before I turn 25.
Messer chokes out a laugh.
If you're still a virgin by then, I'll do you a solid and suck you off myself, my friend.
Lawson gives him a taunting smile.
I'll hold you to that.
We watch him walk south toward his parents' shield on the other side of the main. Despite his humor, there's a slouch to his shoulders as he walks past the stationed night guards. This shift is relegated to the guards without a match or children to go home to. They live a solitary life outside their brotherhood from Urchin Row. Lawson's future, undoubtedly. Would have been mine, too, if Kai's announcement at the market hadn't changed that. Lawson's a good guy. He deserves more. Like a chance for a family or a career higher than the bottom-of-the-barrel guard shift. Messer's mouth set in a firm line, watches Lawson's retreating figure until he's out of sight. "Want to play one more round?" Messer says. I shake my head. I have a meeting with the dressmaker, then I'm meeting Kai. Anya has been working overtime to finish some last-minute alterations on my dress. The clock tower reads 10 minutes until midnight. I need to leave now if I'm going to arrive at our scheduled time.
Risqué. I like it.
Smiling, I push from my chair. Thank you for letting me win.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He does a terrible job of hiding his smile. I'll beat you next game. We share a smile as I walk away. The rest of the shops along the main are closed for the day, but Anya's store is lit from within when I enter. She's sewing a delicate flower design by hand onto the fabric draped across her table. Looking up at me over her spectacles, she erupts in a smile. I just finished, she says, laying her current work to the side to retrieve the red gown hanging behind her. Try it on so I can get a look at you. I take the garment from her and duck into the section cordoned off by drapery. It feels wrong to slip it on. The material is soft, but I can't help but note that it's nothing in comparison to the softness of the dresses the women wore at the market. Simple, but rich in color was my only request to Anya. The dress swoops across my collarbone, the bottom hem stopping inches from my feet, the bodice hugging my figure, but not too tight to be considered inappropriate for a captain's wife. Stepping out, I blush at Anya's overinflated gasp of delight. Gorgeous girl! Absolutely gorgeous! She leads me to stand in front of the mirror, placing her magnifying specs on top of her head to see me better. I can tack it a little here, she says, tugging on the neckline. Just so we don't give anyone a show. I smile at her. The hat would be great. Thank you. She turns to grab her pincushion when the bell over the door signals someone's arrival. It's Kai. He takes a hesitant step inside.
Pardon. May I come in?
If Anya is surprised by the future captain's arrival, she doesn't show it. You are going to get me in trouble, boy. He smiles as he closes the distance.
I don't think I'm the one who's going to cause all the trouble.
His eyes rake over my dress, sending another wave of heat to my cheeks. What are you doing here? I ask, glancing at Anya before lowering my voice to a whisper. I thought we were meeting later.
I'm here to pay the tab,
he says, pulling coins from his pocket. He drops them in Anya's hand, adding an extra gold with a final clink.
Could you give us a minute, Anya?
She bites the coin and winks at him. I can give you a few. Then she disappears into the back of the store. Kai comes closer and slides his arms around my waist. He laces his fingers across my middle, smiling as he meets my eyes in the full-length mirror.
I wanted to see you in your dress before the ceremony tomorrow,
he says, perusing my figure.
And I can say that I am not disappointed.
I lean back into his embrace, letting myself have this moment. Just the two of us. This is better than being in front of hundreds of people. We're swaying gently, our heartbeats setting the rhythm.
Remember the time we fell asleep playing hide and seek?
I smile. In the pantry. We were 11. Messer was it, and he got bored of searching just 15 minutes in. We stayed hidden for hours. It sent the entire grove into a panic, and it wasn't until the kitchen staff reported for dinner that our hiding spot was discovered.
That was the day I told my mother I was going to marry you, when it came time to pick a match.
He loosens his grip, letting me spin in his arms. I wrap my arms around his neck and pull him down for a kiss. It's a kiss edged with heat and untapped desire. He frames my face in his hands, deepening the connection, and I'm barely able to stop the moan from slipping out of my mouth. Pulling away, Kai's eyes are smiling as he looks at me.
I couldn't have picked a better bride.
Swallowing past the surprising knot in my throat, I bring his hands to my mouth, kissing the back of his knuckles. I am honored that you chose me. He tugs me in for another kiss.
I'll see you tomorrow.
I nod. Okay. Then, as if he tries to stop himself but can't, he kisses me one last time.
It leaves me breathless and wanting and nearly bursting at the seams with adoration for the man before me. When he finally pulls away, I become aware of the place below my sternum, thumping with every beat of my heart, almost as if it's agitated. My eyes follow him out the door, smile falling away once I'm sure he's gone. Tears sting my eyes, and I fight to keep them in check as Anya comes back out, fretting over the new wrinkles in the fabric. The realization burns like hot coals in the back of my throat the entire trek back to my shield, the first tear finally slipping past my defenses when I enter my room. Aker's gaze is careful as he takes me in.
What's wrong?
He stands from the floor, movements slow, like he's scared he'll spook me. I shake my head and sit on the edge of my bed to unlace my boots.
Jovi.
Again, with the other name. I can't stop the tears as they overflow and drop onto the top of my shoes. Kneeling in front of me, Aker stops my jerky movements with hands over mine. This is the second time he's touched me. I squeeze my eyes shut, and more tears escape. What does it feel like? I pull my hands from his, not wanting his comfort. What does it feel like when someone uses their power on you? He sucks in a breath and leans back, only his knees visible as I stare at the ground.
It depends. Most powers are easy to detect because they're rooted in the physical world. Water, fire, sheer brute strength. But anything relating to the psyche is more difficult. Why? What is it you think you felt?
Placing my palm flat against the spot under my sternum, I find the courage to meet Aker's gaze. It was screaming, I whisper. His eyes move from where I'm holding my hand against my body to my face.
Your magic wants to protect you. It can react on instinct.
There's more to it than that, but I can't find a voice to explain yet. The invasion of smell and taste, like Kai became condensed into a sensation of brine and softness and love. I wipe the wetness from my face.